Hello. Welcome to episode 3 of the Flower Power Podcast. This is a continuation of the Pleasanton After Dark episode. So after everybody was pretty much over recording the podcast and wanted to go down and hang out at the bar, Danny Autry and Colin Dunbar decided to stick around and we talked Highland Games for another hour, I think. So I hope you enjoy this episode. We'll get right to it. Pleasanton After Dark Part 2. Let's go.
Like half the Highland Games is
there. Probably, honestly.
Alright, well the chaos is pretty much over.
Yeah.
There's gonna be this podcast is gonna end up being fucking 30 minutes of conversation with 45 minutes of piecemeal conversation from the fucking jackalope party we just had. A lot of good stories.
Yeah,
a lot of good info, but...
Well, the problem was I invited 12 people to come to my room and record a podcast.
And they all came at once.
They all came at once.
Yeah.
We all came at once. We've all been drinking. Yeah. It was all the last day of the game, so everyone was excited to talk about everything.
See, but there wasn't much talk about this week. Actually, the most talk about this weekend, I think, happened...
Right before they got here.
Well, but yeah, it was like... At first, it was Aaron and Jamie that showed up, and then you showed up, and it was like a legitimate, like, podcast kind of conversation, and then it went to hell.
Because we introduced twice that amount of people in this place. And then side conversations.
And then the ladies that I invited, they came in, they sat in the back, talked to Katie during, like, while we're trying to record. You guys are having your own conversations back there, and then they bail.
Was there any good content back there?
Oh, yeah. You guys missed out.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Katie got all the secrets in the corner. She's gonna have her own from what I heard on the bed. What podcast. Pillow talk with Katie Lily.
Pillow talk with Katie Lily. That's good content.
All of it's secondhand though, because no one will stick around for the actual podcast. I wanna be like, I wanna talk about it, but I don't want it on camera. Okay?
I would say the weekend though, pretty good. The weather was good.
This is the best weather that Pleasanton's ever had.
Yeah, probably. I mean, yeah. I don't think it got above 85 at all. And it was a lot of 80, 75 to 80.
I've been here almost every year since 18.
Okay.
And yeah, like, we've been fucked with weather.
Yeah.
Probably.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Like, and obviously there was a couple years of COVID that didn't happen, but like... Out of that 6 years, there's been 4 years of competition.
I've been here 3 consecutive years, and 2022, 120 degrees. Last year was
manageable.
Manageable in the 90s.
Yeah.
And then this year was just actually pleasant weather. Good, thank you. So I think overall, like, the quality of the weekend, weather-wise, was good. The games, perspective from the bottom. Hashtag perspective from the bottom. Pretty.
You should start your own podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Solid. Yeah. It was definitely it's a formidable group. The group that was throwing this weekend was, I mean, rivaled that of World Championship. I don't know. I wasn't there, but I just watched y'all throw a World Championship, and there was the top four worlds was the top four today.
Well, if I'm being honest, there were some guys that were throwing here today that probably should have been a world.
Sure.
Now, that's tough when you're talking about, like, half the field being Americans.
You can only invite so many Americans.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like fucking Team USA basketball, right? Like, there's 150 people that should be on the team.
Yeah. But you can only
pick the team, right? So, like, you pick your best. We obviously picked our best for Worlds, and they showed why they should be there at fucking Worlds, because they were fucking 1-2.
Yeah, solid.
Well,
and then what? Glenn Neese was third in both of these competitions.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There were solid things out there.
And it's the world is right, but it's like there's always one guy from a country.
Sure. Yeah.
One guy from a region half the time.
Yeah.
You know, like there's the depth is not there for the rest of the world.
True.
The top end, obviously.
Track and field's the same way. Like, you look at the shot put.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If we let all of our guys go to the Olympics, it'd be like...
Listen, the podium...
You know, 7 out of the top 10 would all be American.
And the podium... Well, 1, 2, 3, and 4. 1, 2, and 4 were Americans. 3 was coached by an American. So, I mean...
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing that in an event or in a sport that was never originated by... Americans that we have been able to have the depth that we do.
Yeah.
You know, obviously track and field is one thing, but to have that fucking permeate down into the Highland Games, like, wild.
Yeah.
Not necessarily surprising, again, just the amount of people.
Yeah.
But, like, even if you look at it as a whole, like, space-wise, right? Like, the amount of space the USF takes up versus Europe. You combine all those countries.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't have the depth that still, USA yeah. does.
You're right.
You know?
Yeah.
You're right. We've got a good system for creating athletes here some way. They usually get funneled towards other sports, but get a good good system.
Yeah.
But I think this was a high quality competition just all around.
Yeah. A lot of guys showed up, like really showed up.
Put it in.
Games, yeah.
Like we said earlier, third place was 86 feet on the lightweight. That's not.
There were numbers that
80 feet, almost like most of the group hit pretty close to 80 feet.
I was 79 low. Uh-huh. I think I took 5th or 6th.
And there was somebody right behind you
yeah,
as well.
Like it was I mean the fact that like a competition that was me, Aaron Castle and Nick Aston that in any general game should be a top 3 competitor.
Yeah.
We went 5, 6, 7 with a grand total of 1 point separating 5th and 7th. Like we were all a half a point apart.
Yeah, you're right. 47 and a half, 48, 48 and a half. It's
like
wild.
You know, and then the top 3 were arguably like some of the closest competitors we've had and were in a league amongst themselves as the top 3. Like there was groups. There was the top 3.
I mean,
fourth was
it was
kind of
separate.
Well,
like John scored 12 points. I got second at 22.5. Glenn,
that's because you fucked up. Wow.
I got 17 feet. There was just 6 other guys that got fucking 17 feet.
That was crazy. Yeah.
And then they're like, "Oh, we're moving up to 18." I was like, "Excuse me."
But that's a snapshot of the quality of the competition.
Yeah,
you never go and have 5 competitors at 18
like
feet.
Like 9 times
taking shots
at 18. If you hit 17 and John's not there, you're winning the games.
Yeah. But you had 5 guys still in it taking shots at 18
feet. At 18 feet, yeah.
When I was here at 9, when I was here at 19, it was 17 was me and Spencer.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
That was it.
That's just a quality competition, yeah.
Yeah. Like.
But then Glenn and Damien were close. Glenn,
36 and 36 and a half.
Yeah.
They were third and fourth were really close.
So like John was very much in the driver's seat. I was very much in the driver's seat for second. And then it was a battle for third between Glenn and Damien. And then there was an 11 point difference between you guys at 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah.
And y'all very well just could have been robbing points from each other most of the competition.
Yeah, yeah.
Like restacking 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
You know, or 5, 6, 7 or whatever it was.
We were
just constantly just rotating that position.
Like if you look at the numbers, it was literally a rotation. And honestly, Damien did better in like a handful of events than the rest of us, but there was a lot of events that like he was right in the mix with that 4, 5, 6 group.
Yeah.
So
well, of course, you know, Damien and the Hammers, he did
really, yeah.
He is modeling the Chuck Caston approach where I'm just going to be consistent in everything. And
he is. And he's
you got to beat me to beat me.
Yeah, he's going to podium in almost every event, it feels like.
Yeah, and right before Hammer started, he walked up to me. He's like, because, you know, he's had his, like, little, his injury this year, and, like, Hammers have been kind of rough for him because it hurts. And he's like, I never thought I'd say this, but I'm actually, I just can't wait for Hammers to be over. And I just looked at him and I was like, welcome to my freaking life, dude. He goes, oh, man. He's like, does that mean I got to get better at stones now? I was like, yeah, that's pretty much what that means. Like, you have to now throw stones high 50s in order for you to hate the hammer this much. And then he goes out and throws 115 in the heavy. And I walked over, I was like, you're not allowed to get better stuff anymore. That's not allowed.
Nah, you still can throw the far, yeah.
Fuck Hammers.
Yeah, you had
a
good
a
heavy
piss,
hammer.
I had a piss poor showing in Hammer.
I mean,
you looked pretty though. There was that.
I mean, that's my saving grace in pretty much every event.
Yeah. And you only did two wines, so you can always say, what if I did three?
Yeah, I didn't wear
blades. And what if he put blades on?
What if he put blades on?
I've been saying that since 2018. But yeah. You know,
what if?
If ifs and buts were candies and nuts, I'd have a mouthful of nuts.
Solid.
Oh, God. I don't know. There's, now that, like, for the longest time, like, I never had an issue with hammers, right? Or not for the longest time, it was fucking 2 years.
2 years.
When I was...
Way back when.
Shit, it feels like way back when, though. Like, we're talking, what, 2019? 2021 was probably still solid.
Yeah, 2021 was decent, but there was not really anything going on. Yeah. So it was like, I think I did one or two games that year.
Yeah.
And I, like, had started working full-time, and so, like, I put whatever training energy I had left into the Olympic trials that year just to fucking, you know, go out with one more trials and retire. But, yeah, like, 2019, 2018, like, hammers were, I had no worries because I was, even if I wasn't going to win, I was going to be essentially top three. And without blades, without having to do a lot, but it was because I was... training full time for the wire hammer, yep. So like it didn't make sense for me to, because the technique for the blades is so much different than what I try to focus on without blades, right? So like it didn't make sense for, and it was much more similar to the wire hammer, so it didn't make sense for me to be an active wire hammer participant and then put on blades to completely change that to try to do something else, right? So that, like, it just, it wasn't ever really the move, and I was competitive enough that I didn't need it, per se, right? Like, could have I thrown farther, maybe.
Yeah, but whatever. At the time, you were, I mean, you know, if the top hammer guys weren't there, you were winning every event, and then even if the top guys were there, you were top three.
Yeah, was it? So like,
most Mike Bukowski never used, maybe use one blade sometimes.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, you do what you need to do.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't need to fix what wasn't broken at the time. And now, obviously, like, it's more so that I'm broken rather than my hammers are broken. But, like, obviously now I'm like, all right, like, what happens if I put blades on? What happens if I go make a pair of boots?
You know? What did you go on the weekend? Like, 102 and 125 or something?
117 and 101. I think the numbers.
I don't know why I'm asking. I have it written down.
Yeah,
we literally have.
Yeah, I have the internet.
It was. It was the inches might have been better, but it was basically
101, 117.
Yeah, nothing exciting. Considering my heavy hammer PR is 119.
Oh.
And my light hammer PR is 143. So, ipso facto, I shit on myself.
You did. I saw it.
What was your first heavy hammer? Because that was kind of
107.
No.
Yeah.
No. I'm talking about today.
Oh. 90, it was 97.
I mean, it can't be that. I mean.
96, 97, I think.
Yeah, 97 or 98.
No, maybe it was your light. I remember you threw one of the hammers. It was just bad. I don't remember the number.
It might have been one of the first ones.
My first heavy was 92, so I'm right there with you.
I think my first light was like 102.
That was probably what I was thinking of.
Yeah, I haven't really had issues with hammers this year. It's obviously haven't been good, but they've been very solid considering what last year was.
Last year you were dealing with like a major like back thing.
Yeah, but like still like today was like I don't know how.
I mean, I beat you in both that way. How or why they were that? Yes,
but I don't know how or why they were that bad. Like nothing felt that off that they should have been that bad.
Yeah,
like I opened the season with almost a 130 and a 110. I think I was 129 and 108, something like that. So like. No reason for me to be this bad this weekend, but at the same time, I think I had season's best in the lightweight.
Yeah, your lightweight was good today, man.
Yeah, solid. Like solid heavyweight.
I mean, when's the last time you were that close to 80?
I mean, I was always, again, 19 was like, I had a couple sprinkled in the 80 to 83 range.
Yeah.
But it was like, you know, here and there. On average, I was like a 78 to 80.
Yeah.
I think that's where you were. Like every one of your throws was in that 78, 79.
79, I think it two of 79 or one of 79.
I think it was 77, 79, 78. But yeah.
I might have taken a picture of that one.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, yeah, it was, that was like a surprising highlight. Whereas like Costa Mesa, I think I topped out at like 77, but I threw 41 in the heavy.
Yeah.
Where the fuck did that come from?
You were 77.6, 79.75, and 78.75.
Yeah.
So I mean, you were
solid, felt good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the fucking joy of the Highland Games, though. It's like you can train, you can be prepared, and does it fucking matter the day of? Like,
sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, it is what it is.
That's what I said earlier. Like, I was, ever since Worlds, like, my whole goal was, like, I want to break the world record in the lightweight and I want to break it in chief. So literally the only thing I've trained since Worlds is lightweight and chief.
Oh, wow, well, yeah.
And my heavyweight went nuts and my lightweight was still coming out.
like, had a hell of a game.
Yeah.
Threw great in both.
Yep.
Did he get close to the world record neither?
No.
5 feet. 5 feet on the lightweight.
I mean, shit. I mean, I can't be mad at 92.
No.
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 What is that? 98?
No.
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 No, I can't be mad at 92. That just means, but it does mean you're.
Well,
that's
like saying, I can't be mad at 79, but is that 84?
Yeah.
You know, like. And, you know, and then the fucking, the stones at Pleasanton are, you have to be happy with the numbers that you get because
they're not normal
stones.
Yeah, you can't judge those on any other games you go to.
Yeah,
you're throwing an 18 and a 26. I, like,
the stones are demoralizing in Pleasanton. They are.
They are. But you feel good when you, like, if you're to throw, if you're even to fucking sniff 40 feet.
Yeah.
With that Braemar, you're like,
oh, man.
Well, I think you threw
2019, you threw the Braemar pretty well here, didn't you?
I think this was, I'll have to go back and look, I don't remember, but I think this might have been my
22.
Furthest. This might have been my furthest with that stone.
Okay.
Because I threw 41 this weekend.
Okay.
I know I've broken 40 before.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've thrown 41.
Maybe it was 22 that you did really well with it.
Well, no, there's a 63 on the mark, on the book from Pleasanton with the open.
Yeah.
And that was COVID year. Or 2021. So it was the first year that they had it again. It was all amateurs. I showed up just to, you know, compete. And I threw with the A class. And I had a lights out day. I didn't have a throw under 60 feet. And I thought I was the shit. And then they measured the stone. Turns out it wasn't the normal Pleasanton stone. It was like a 13.8-pound stone.
Hey.
Crushed it.
That's hilarious because that's what the AMAs did today. Everybody set, like, the first half of the first flight, you know, the first half of the class in their first throw, all set, like, 4 or 5 foot PRs. And they were like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Well, that's the thing. Like, so for some reason, I don't know if everyone else that was throwing with me that day was having a bad day. Because I questioned it. Because my first throw, it didn't feel great, but it went like 60 foot 2 inches. And I was like, wait
a minute.
But then everyone else was like, no, this is kind of right where I usually throw. So I was like, okay, I guess it's a legit
against,
stone.
You're throwing against A's.
A's, right?
And A's is a loose term sometimes.
Well, that year was like the COVID year, and there was only one amateur class. It was like A's, B's. It was like all the A's. But they were all like literally like, oh, no, this is what that's what I normally throw, so this must be a legit stone. So I got my, like, that boosted my confidence huge.
But when you're throwing against guys that don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, I'm within like a foot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was the season best. You're like, well, you're dumb.
Yeah.
That stone is fucking almost 3 pounds light.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the, like, again, one of the fun / crazy parts about the Highland Games is, like, you never know what stone you're going to get on that day, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, every game has their stones.
Stones is probably the most variable.
It's the only
implement that we throw.
It's that and cabers. That's the only unknown factor.
Yeah.
But like, you can get a 16.1. You can get an 18.5.
Yeah.
The shape can be a different.
I've thrown a 20-pound open stone.
You can get a fucking 17-pound fucking diamond that throws like a fucking.
Well, that's.
You can get a 16-pound pancake.
Yeah.
Victoria's like a 17-pound stone. I threw that 58 feet. And then another 17-pound stone that I threw earlier this year, I threw a 53.
Come on in.
You know? So, like, the shape of the stone makes a difference and the weight, you know, there's all kinds of.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for checking in.
I heard just hear you guys talking.
No, our neighbors are probably pissed.
Yeah. Fuck these guys.
But
honestly, yeah, the shapes, the size, like the weight, the weight is honestly half the time the least amount of the worry.
Thing, yeah.
You can throw a well-shaped 17, 18 pounder.
Well, that's like I was saying earlier today during stone, like that Victoria stone. I can tuck that the exact same as I would tuck a shot.
Yeah.
And so I feel like I can get that as close to what I can throw a shot put as possible. This one, it's like 17.8, so it's a little heavier, but I could not get it to tuck the exact same.
It's got a weird...
I like the shape of this one.
See, but like, for rotational, I can feel how that would work.
I like... And I don't know if it's whatever fucking I can do, but like I have no... issue usually getting that it's the thicker stones that are harder to get for rotation, like to get my elbow up high enough to keep that motherfucker in, but like anything that's that kind of size, like I have no problem shoving that, even if it doesn't feel great, shove that fucker into the side of my neck and just go.
Like I have a very like 80s approach to the glide. And my tuck is, it's not quite Ulf Timmerman, but it's down in my throat.
Yeah.
And if I'm throwing a shot, it feels amazing. Trying to get that feeling with a stone is hard.
Yeah, see, mine's higher. Like, I'm actually putting it in the side of my neck. I'm not worried about putting it in my,
and as a
under my chin.
As a rotational guy, you shouldn't.
Yeah, so like, I'm like, what are you guys talking about?
If you were, I would be laughing at you.
Yeah, but I mean, again, like the Pleasanton stones have made a mockery out of people that are great stone throwers.
Yeah.
Like, even like someone like a Spencer Tyler, who is, you know, an all-around great thrower. I watched him spend a literal minute, which is crazy, right?
But he also has the most infamous cheat in all of the Braemar stone.
He didn't poke it with his finger. So,
there was one year, and this didn't happen every year or every throw, but there was one year he could not get the stone to tuck in his neck. Like he was throwing the stone like 29 feet.
Very consistent though at never being able to tuck. Like, but never could put it in his neck.
The judge was standing behind, you know, so he's a right-handed thrower. The judge was standing at his back. He took his left hand and with his pointer finger supported the Braemar and then took his throw. And then he won the event at like a 42-foot putt. I was like, you can't be mad. Like, it wasn't called because nobody could see it except for, like, unless you were standing on the other side. It was honestly hilarious.
Hilarious.
But this motherfucker would spend a literal minute.
Talking still.
60 seconds going, oh fuck. Oh fuck. Like it was like the world's dumbest SNL joke. Like, what the fuck are you doing, bro? You're gonna throw this thing 40 feet, just shove the thing in the side of your fucking face. Like, what? I end up calling the dudes fucking slippy. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, you're gonna throw this far, just shove it in there. Put some chalk, put some ticky on your neck, like the fuck, bro. But like, again, out of nowhere, a guy who is very capable of 40 feet with this stone can't put it in his fucking neck. For no reason, really. Yeah. You know, like,
I mean, don't get me wrong, the Pleasanton the Braemar sucks.
That's terrible. You
know, it's a bowling ball.
It's terrible. It's just a legacy stone.
Yeah,
they gave it Vieira's name, and it's going to be around forever now.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad they did.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's that's the stone you show up and you got to throw.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nobody enjoys it.
Well, that's like the actual Braemar stone.
Yeah.
That's a 28-pound stone that everyone probably hates.
Yeah.
There's stones at every around the entire country and the entire world that you know you will never have a good distance with.
Right.
But there's also vice versa.
Yeah, there's some that you seek out.
Well, right? Like, you'll do, you know, consecutively well, or not consecutively was the word I'm looking for, but...
Yeah, but
objectively.
Yeah.
Like, you'll throw objectively well with that stone.
Yeah.
You're never going to throw a PR. If you throw a physical PR with either of the Pleasanton stones, you should probably be drug tested. That's fucking insane. Those are unwell stones to throw PRs with.
I couldn't imagine, like, my Braemar PR, that's back from when I was an amateur, but 47 feet. Imagine 40, I mean, what, the field record's 43?
Yeah.
With that stone?
Yeah.
And you walk up and you feel good that day and you do some warm-ups, you're like, 43 feet? I'm going to crush this thing. And then you hit a good one, right? You're behind it. You get a long push. You get that big flick. You're like, fuck,
37
yes.
feet.
Yeah. Like, the fuck was that, bro? Like, I put every ounce of everything. I was behind it. I stayed long. I did everything needed to do. And I didn't break 40 feet. You know, like... And then the record's 43?
Yeah.
You want me to now get another 3 feet off that perfect throw?
No way, sir.
Fuck you. Fuck
you. I mean, shit, John opened up at 42 and still couldn't get the field record.
That guy.
He fouled the rest of them, though.
Well, yeah. Because he's like, I gotta put this thing 45. And so he didn't think of it. I got to beat it by an inch. He's like, I got to put this thing at 45.
Yeah. All out, sell out.
And don't get me wrong, I think the stone might have landed at 44, 45 for at least one of those.
Right.
Yeah.
But he was definitely flying.
Great fouls.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Danny, you've been doing a lot with like recording and making really cool videos.
Right.
You are the like premier right now of like you're not even doing your own videos, right? Like you're doing other people's shit.
Like you're in the middle of competition and you're recording other people and then editing their videos and sending it to them.
Oh, you see my results.
It's awesome. Like it's a really cool thing that I think you do.
Just a hobby. It's a hobby on top of my hobby, and I really do enjoy just like the editing and syncing up the videos and making it look cool. I'm not creative or artistic in anything else.
Just
art. But this is just like the only expression of art that I can actually do, and I enjoy doing it. And I don't want to I don't make any money off of YouTube. I don't intend to make any money off of YouTube or Instagram or anything like that. I have no intentions of that. I got a good job. I own a gym. Good. And I just want to come hang out with my friends. Film them doing cool shit.
We, as I'm sure, like the people that get these videos too, are even more excited. But like, just watching the content and knowing that like, this is coming from somebody else. Because most of the Highland Games athletes, like the any video you get is a self-filmed video.
Sure.
Right?
You're
doing shit that's elevating the sport because of the fact that most of us. You know, there's obviously a few exceptions, like fucking Kyle Lilly. But, like, there's very few of us that have a significant social media president.
Time out. I would not consider sub 5,000 a significant...
Yeah.
Presence is the word I was looking for. But not necessarily significant presence, but you're putting out quality content. You're putting out consistent content.
Yeah.
Most of us aren't doing it, right? Like...
Yeah.
I never was putting out quality content, but I was putting out at least consistent content when I was, you know,
doing more of the track and field stuff and actually training.
Because I was also using my social media platform as a fundraising platform. During track and field, like I wasn't making any money, I wasn't getting any support, so I had to pay for all of my travel on my own. as a professional track and field athlete, you only had, unless you were going to Europe, you only had two or three chances a year to make any money, right. And you were still paying for yourself to go to those meets. So I was using my social media platform as a driver for a GoFundMe to help pay for my travel expenses to go to these meets.
Yeah.
To try to make these teams to, you know, back and forth. And then on the back end of that, I was doing that consistently with Highland Games and doing all that. And then, you know, Highland Games kind of fell off. My fucking social media career kind of fell off. And I'm like, I always say, I got a sick video. I'm going to post it. And then it's like, I don't get it to that day. And then I'm like, it's fucking 3 weeks later. Like,
I won, I think,
for me, was my first ever pro win was Detroit at the beginning of the month. I didn't ever post about it.
Time out. Your first ever pro win?
Yeah.
Really?
I don't think I ever, like, I came into
Obviously, you're not including Scotland, because I know you won, one in Scotland. You beat me in one of them. Your mom won't let me live it down.
Yeah. Well, but I don't think I beat... I might have beaten you, but I don't think I beat Vlad. I don't know that I... It's whatever. Scotland might have been Scotland, but, like, there's nothing in the U.S. where I, like, outright won a competition. Won a lot of events, obviously, right? And was...
Right. You know, but you were constantly in a class with this...
Yeah,
stack
I was,
class. Like,
I was...
Like a Pleasanton 2024 where...
Was my every...
Always.
Meet kind everything. Of thing.
Like, you're always with the top dog.
I started 2019. I didn't have a single games without at least Spencer, Dan, Kyle.
Yeah.
You know, like, there was always at least three or four guys that were supposed to win that games. And yes, I might have won individual events. I might have, you know, been top three and everything. But at that time, I was still very much trash at Sheaf and Caber.
That's true.
So, like, I would be in the position to win a games, and then I would fucking take last in Caber.
Tank it, yeah.
And I would, you know, at best end up at third.
Hard to win an event.
Yeah, so, like, you can't win a games when you take dead last in something.
Yeah.
And I would do that in two events.
I've learned over the last month you can't win a games taking fifth in something.
Exactly.
And, well, and that just shows to the depth in which the quality of our pro class has gotten to, right?
But it's, like, solid.
But so Detroit was my I can't think of any games other than that I've legitimately won.
Yeah,
I never posted about it. I forgot.
Yeah.
And I kept remembering. Oh, fuck! I should post about it. I should do a Throwback Thursday or a fucking Way Back Wednesday or a Detroit Pizza Tuesday did I ever do it?
That's the thing about social media, though. Like, one, nobody, like, especially if it's a training video, nobody knows when that was. I've posted 3-4 week old videos before as if it was that day's practice. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
I've done that many times.
Yeah.
But, like, and then, like, games, like, even if you post a week or 2 weeks later, it's still engageable content that people enjoy.
It's relatable.
And there's a lot of, and that's the reason I started this podcast that has, like, 20 listeners. There's at least 20.
Shout out, 20 listeners.
There's at least 20 people that are, like, craving Highland Games content,
right,
whether that's Instagram, podcast, YouTube, whatever it is. You know, so the more people that do it, the better. And I do think Danny is doing something really cool, getting angles of videos. Like, I literally sat there and watched you record a WAP video that I know is probably going to look really cool.
I'm going to try.
I'm going to try. Even just the way that it was recorded, like, you're not getting that kind of angle with a stationary camera.
We know as athletes that some of the angles that we record at are strictly for us to look over. 100%. To look over and get the coaching angle, right?
And I do the same thing,
right? 90%
of what we're recording has nothing to do with actual content.
Yeah, it doesn't look great for the, like, that zero angle, looking from the back of a weight for distance. Sometimes looks kind of cool.
Yeah.
But if you can go, like, offset 3/4 angle, you can see the movement, and you can also see the flight of the weight better, all those things. But, you're right. It does give you extra views and kind of different ways to look at it, like how the spectator might view it.
Exactly.
If the spectator had a front row seat.
You also, like, you can only do that when you're not doing it for yourself.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you set up that camera, like, I used to do this again with track and field, right? Sure, like, yeah. I would try to set up like, oh, yeah. This is gonna be a sick angle.
Yeah.
You fuck up that throw.
Well, you fuck up the throw. Or somebody stands in front of your camera.
Well, like, how many more throws can I take at that angle before I'm like, all right, I need to figure out why this is fucked up.
Yeah.
Why did I fuck up this throw five times in a row?
Oh, 100%.
It can't just because I moved the camera over there and then you move the camera back and nothing's fucked up. You're like, oh, it was because I moved.
Well, yeah. you're most of the time, I don't think that Danny's recording anything. Like, I don't think anyone else is recording anything I'm doing except for the camera that I set up.
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden I get a DM on Instagram with a sick ass video from Venom Claw, and I'm like, dude, Danny's the man.
Yeah. Yeah. I do really appreciate it. Like, I'm as much a fan of the sport as I am an athlete in the sport, and I don't know how that is with everybody else, and it doesn't matter, right? That doesn't matter. But I really enjoy the Highland Games. My reasons for going pro aren't necessarily because I thought, like, oh, I need to go out there and contend with the big dogs. That's not realistic for me, but I live in Alaska. It's expensive to travel. This is a way to offset. And fortunately for me, I've got something that athletic directors want to see at their games, and so I get to subsidize the cost of the hobby that I do. And then on top of that, I'm with the most elite group of athletes in the entire world. So I want to get that, like, what I see, front row seat, for everybody else, because I think it's really cool. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've all had conversations about what makes cool Highland Games content. Is it setting up a camera and doing a live stream? That's fairly boring. Except for, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
But my mom's not going to watch it.
Maybe 20 people listening. Dad,
yeah, yeah. There's a few people that would sit there and just, like,
They
would actively watch it and be like, oh, somebody's up.
It is, but I mean, it's...
But if you piece that down and put some highlight reels up...
It's the same issue that we have with track and field. Track and field, we're following the same suit, just with even less coverage, right? Like, even if we set up a live stream, like, it's not cut and edited into a way that the general public
wants to see,
can get excited about it, right? Like, the people that know it want to log in. They want to find a live stream of their favorite throwers or of their favorite event, whether it's discus, whether it's Highland Games, whether it's whatever the fuck it is, right? Like, that small group of people will be dedicated enough to join whatever program they have to get into to watch. The rest of the public is like, show me a video.
I want to see something that...
You know, or give it to me for free or whatever. But, like, it needs to be... To make this sport and to make, honestly, track and field in the throws and the rest of the field events in track and field, but to make it a successful viewing experience, you need to have more editing quality.
Yeah.
Well, I think it needs to be
more,
like,
effort into the production.
There needs to
of
be the
footage.
There needs to be the live stream. That has to be something that, because there are
going
to be...
the everyday fans.
Yes.
Or the dedicated fans.
But then you've got, like, you think of like, Strongman and how World's Strongest Man, they treat that event as a TV show.
Yeah.
Like, everything is recorded for it to be edited to a TV show. Now, I don't want that for the Highland Games, but you can take a lot, you can put a camera out there on a field and then release that footage a month later with a well-edited...
Even if it's a day later.
Well-edited, well-narrated,
right.
And you can have very engageable content that could legitimately be put up on ESPN and people will watch it.
Right.
It's just not happening.
Yeah.
You know?
But the crazy part is it did happen.
Yeah.
I'm like, where did that...
Where did
that go? Granted, that was, again, that was for all of the... lesser sports, right? Like, and it was everything was an ESPN ploy, right? Like, ESPN didn't have contracts with anybody. SportsCenter didn't have contracts with anybody. They didn't have the rights to NFL, NBA, NHL, MLB. Like, they were going at the Ocho was...
Well,
the
Ocho
basis.
They brought that back too. Like, that's a legitimate thing again.
Yeah, but they. The Ocho wasn't the Ocho. The Ocho just was ESPN. They were covering the shit that nobody else wanted to go cover because they were a brand new sporting network and they had to go get fucking content because they weren't allowed to cover the big three or the big four, right?
Right.
And so, like, that's where that time frame in the 90s were like, oh my God, Highland Games was on TV. People were making money. Ryan Vieira was making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. I think the story I heard was Vieira made like 130 grand, 150 grand a year.
Okay, but he was...
It was for like 3 years.
But he was... He was also going to Scotland for months at a time and was doing like 50 games a
full-time
year.
Job. Yeah. Right. Full-time job.
That was literally real job. All he did.
Real job.
But
not realistic for most of us.
And have a TV spot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I've seen videos of Francis on a fucking television network on a game show flipping cabers into a trash can.
I was talking about that with Alistair today. Like, I was literally... standing over there during caber one, I was talking about like you'd probably make this caber look like your bitch, huh? He's like, I could probably still do it. But we were talking about his little the game show. He's like, yeah, like we literally just we didn't know what was gonna happen. We showed up and we winged it basically. We didn't know what we were doing. And then like looking back at that video, they're literally putting every caber in the basket like it's something that they've practiced for months.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Insane. But like again, it was at a time where that content was way more consumable.
Yeah.
I was just watching a fucking Netflix documentary about competitive eating. And it was the battle between fucking Chestnut and Kobayashi. Mm-hmm. And it was something that I remember vividly as like a kid, the competitive eating league that spawned from that.
Yeah.
There was an entire fucking reality TV show, competition show about competitive eating. They would eat fucking pounds of mayonnaise and fucking 50-foot sushi rolls and like weird fucking shit, right? But it was an entire league of nothing but competitive eating. And have you seen anything since?
No.
Well, I read, like, everything has had its time.
Yeah, I think...
had its day.
I think that modern media...
How do we get back into that kind of spot?
We're going to have to find the way to make... Like, I really appreciate making that easily digestible stuff. Like, that's what I do. You know, make a throw or a, like a few, like a montage of throws.
Yeah.
But you got to fit within the confines of that Instagram reel, which is a minute and a half. You know, so you got to find a way to shorten that down. How do we bridge that gap to make it, okay, there's a lot of people that will look at something for 15 to 30 seconds and then scroll on past and go on to the next thing, but how many of those can you engage to get to maybe sit and watch a 20-minute YouTube video that's a recap of the
I mean, that's a great point.
It's hard to figure that out. I'm not the one to figure out because that's not my job and I don't, that's not what I'm trying to do. I would rather do a lot of like, let's get a lot of viewers looking at what y'all are doing. And then I've got a YouTube channel that, yeah, it follows my training. I'm a low-level pro. Look, learn something if you want. I'm gonna say some things, and then you can see, like, maybe what's your path to get better.
Even on that note, like, you can see, I'm sure most of us have that fucking business profile, right, for Instagram or whatever.
Yeah.
So you can see all your insights, right?
Yeah.
You can see that when you post a 30-second or a fucking 60-second reel, your average watch time is like 15
much lower,
seconds.
Much
lower. Not even that. I've got a video that I posted like maybe 2 weeks ago that's got like 60,000 views, and you're like, as someone who's only got 4,000 followers,
that's
like,
pretty big.
That's pretty huge.
Yeah.
But then it's like, okay, it's got 250 likes out of 50,000 views, and it's a 16-second video that has an average watch time of 4 seconds.
Yeah. What happened?
Yeah, what is going on?
Yeah, I got a similar...
Did it just get put to the front of the line because
somehow.
You had a good song?
Yeah,
somehow.
Like, was it whatever the fuck it was? And it's like,
yeah.
Now your content is based more off of the fucking hashtags that you put into it.
Yeah, I don't
the
do...
fucking
yeah.
The audio that you put with it than it is the actual content, right? Like, no one gives a fuck about the content because clearly you're looking at it, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm seeing that no one's watching the fucking 60 seconds of my video, they're listening to the first 10 seconds of that song.
And liking it.
And they're logging
if
that.
If that.
They're
like I said,
right?
50,000 views with like 200 likes. Like,
yeah, well, that's
most
yeah.
of,
that's
most
pretty...
of them, they watch it long enough to register as a view, and then they swipe.
So my most current, like, really one that popped off was Ponzio and Maine throwing the 60-foot stone.
Yeah.
And I got something like 22,000 views and... probably 400 likes, which was like that's fairly
solid.
Good. That's fairly good engagement.
Yeah.
but
I don't know what the insights are as far as like average watch time.
I mean, so this video, for example, it's the last lightweight video that I posted right before this weekend.
Okay.
67,000 views, 384 likes, average watch, so it's a 12-second video, average watch time 5 seconds.
Okay.
So you're not... Right?
So mine was a little better, 21,000 views, but 981 likes. So
that's what's the average watch time?
Average watch time, so it's a total, I'll tell you a second. Average watch time is 11 seconds, the video is... I think the video is only 15 seconds, 16 seconds.
So that's a good.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Pretty good.
But Kyle's got the more
like the average. Probably what's happening most engagement. Of the time.
Yeah. I mean, I used
it. I've got the same thing.
I used a trending song that has been used on 2.5 million reels.
Yeah.
That's why I have 70,000 views.
Yeah.
Because people are looking at the song.
Because it comes up in the algorithm.
It comes up in the algorithm.
And I see that when I'm scrolling sometimes where I'll get like 3 or 4 reels that I scroll past that are the. Like I'm not interested in that content. Why'd it come up? Because it's the same song as the video right before.
Because someone used that same song on a powerlifting video and you liked it.
And I liked it. Yeah. So with this, like I didn't even use a popular song. I rarely do.
I mean, you have some name, like Ponzio's got some names.
Ponzio got some names. Yeah. And because I collaborated with Ponzio. Yeah. It was like basically his profile was his profile was when you do collaboration, as far as I know, it looks like he's posting.
Yeah.
So that obviously
it looks whoever's looking at the profile, whether it's his or theirs.
And I think also I think a collaborator
looks like that person posted it.
Yeah.
So like that's what I mean, fucking clearly on my shoulders. Yeah. But that's what Miley and I did when we posted our engagement photos, right? Like she tagged me as the collaborator or the co-host of that post. Sure.
And it looks like
pops up on both of our stuff. So
I got to share in some of like his.
Yeah. Well, all of her likes are getting put onto mine. All of her comments are putting onto mine, and vice versa. Right. So like, you're getting twice as many engagements because you're merging two profiles and two worlds.
Yeah. And I don't know how that all that to keep it back on the real route back to the subject.
Ponzo's got 30,000 followers. Like,
yeah, he's got a lot. Oh, yeah, it's gonna help a lot. Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know how all of that increases awareness of the games, because that of my followers, probably 80% of them are Highland Games related followers. They're fellow athletes, they're athletic directors, games, people within the games.
It's slow, but I mean like
we're not gonna get the engagement until someone bigger than us finds it. That like track and field wasn't getting dick, right? Hammer throwing wasn't getting dick for a long time. And then fucking Janae Katsavant, I could never fucking say her last name. She's the American hammer thrower. She's Native American. This Olympics was not her games.
No.
But she crushed it at Worlds last year, right? She's been a big time in the sport of the hammer throwing. But she's been blowing up over the last couple years on her Instagram and social media. She's been on ESPN and SportsCenter 4 different times just for eating shit in the hammer.
Yeah.
Like, she posted videos of herself eating shit, and it went viral.
Yeah.
And she ended up with, and at the end, she followed it up with great performances at Worlds and, world-leading marks and shit like that. Yeah. But she ended up with a Nike sponsorship. She was one of the first Native American women to be featured in a Nike sporting ad. She did all these things, and half of it came from the fact that she ate shit in a fucking video on him.
Yeah, I see.
And then it went viral.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to come to make a sport.
What's going to bring attention to a sport. Enough in front of enough eyes. My all-time best, most viral video was Jarvina last year throwing to Caver. She got she was obviously very excited because she turned a very challenging Caver for them. And I got on Facebook of all places, which I don't like, 1.6 million views.
Facebook is wild with the
I don't understand it, but that's my biggest one. But it put it in front of 1.6 million eyes. I got 500 followers. If these followers are going to like find my videos in their feed very often.
Yeah.
Now because they follow me, like they're seeing more Highland Games content, at least training towards it. So I mean, like I said, I don't know exactly how it works. That's not necessarily my intention.
To me, TikTok's the weird one.
I want TikTok is a weird one.
I haven't had one.
YouTube like Shorts is even weirder though.
Like I've got a video that's got over 1 million views on TikTok.
Yeah.
And it's just a games recap of Texas, which is random.
Yeah.
But then like I've got another games recap video that's got like 300 views.
Yeah.
Like TikTok's weird.
I would say my number one goal is like at the grassroots level of like put some quality content out there because like I believe in. Strong believer and a proponent for like the pro classes to continue.
Yes.
Obviously, vested interest because I want to be invited to more pro classes. But
right, if the pro class dies, who's
invited? Yeah. Who's paying for me to come?
Now I gotta be an AM again. Yeah. I'm not gonna pay for this shit.
Yeah. I would definitely still pay for it, and that's the problem.
Dude, but
that's part of the problem. Well, I mean, but
sorry, yeah, I'll let you
finish. But they're. In my opinion, the biggest value in the pro class is the prestige of the pro class and the what type of athlete it attracts. Mm-hmm. It gets Kyle Lilly, John Van Buren to keep doing the dang thing. Mm-hmm. It got you, an Olympic trial athlete, Zechariah Whittington, Olympic trial athlete. I've had conversations with Matthew McDougall, and talked about it on his podcast as well. He's had conversations regarding. He showed up to his first amateur event and he won it. Not even close. He just blew it out of the water.
Yeah.
If he had showed up and I think that he had some other pros maybe in the games, he was interested by the fact, well, maybe I won this, but I can't beat those guys.
Yeah.
If it wasn't real, he would have stopped coming.
Well, that's... I mean,
and I want to see... amazing athletes do the thing because it shows me like, hey, these are like, what are we capable of? And it's not just this guy who he just goes to the festival because he's appreciating his Scottish heritage, which is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
You amateur beat forever, which is perfectly fine. But it doesn't attract the rest of the athletes in the world that may or may not.
That's what I said in my first episode. Like when I was, you know, kind of, how did I get into the games? Like I did the main games. I broke like three or four field records. I won the games. And I thought at that, I was like, well, this was kind of fun. I'll probably do some local stuff. I got invited to Loon. And there were pros at Maine, but, I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm talking shit, but, like,
it was local pros.
Local pros.
Local pros.
Regional pros
that smaller games can... It's a wide variety.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Guys that were good 5 years ago can be guys that are local.
And I think the people, if they listen to this, the people that I'm talking about will understand that my next games was Loon, and I got to meet Matt Vincent and Andy Vincent and Spencer Tyler and Dan McKim and Scott Ryder and, like, literally all the best
elite.
Pros of that
the
time.
The elite of the games, yeah.
And
yeah.
That's what drew me to want to actually
yes.
put all this time into the games because I want to be up there with those guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I don't know the real answer, and I'll never claim to know the real answer, but I've had conversations around a campfire after games talking about if you're trying to convince a board, because a festival board is going to be made up of pipers and drummers and
clans,
and you might have one representative from athletic director, they have to say, justify me giving you $5,000 to $10,000 so you can pay some guys to come throw when I've got a bunch of people paying me to come throw. Tell me how that puts more, if we're talking from a sheer business point of view, tell me how that puts more people in the festival. And I don't think that you can actually
you can't
explain that objectively, but subjectively
until you have a games that has consistent pros.
Yeah.
And your fans start to realize the difference.
It's something special.
Between the A's, between the Masters, between like... Because I've talked about the same thing before. It's like the pros is only a source of athlete retention.
And that's exactly it
like,
where I come in. Because there's going to be... There's always going to be those basically amateur B-level people that... Wow, it's a great weekend to put on the kilt, maybe paint your face,
yeah.
Maybe embrace your Scottish heritage and go throw a thing. But you're not going to have 115 athletes on the field doing that for very long.
If it wasn't...
There is a certain percentage of those guys that are motivated to get much better than they are, so they can maybe be a pro.
100%.
And it increases the quality of the show.
If it wasn't for the pros, I would only probably do one or two games a year.
Yeah, the ones that were close.
I would have probably hung it up years ago.
Yeah,
I would do. I mean, depending, I've been living in San Diego, Orange County for the last, off and on for the last 10 years, but I do anything in Orange County and anything in San Diego, and that'd be it.
Yeah.
So I'd do 2-3 games a year.
Right.
But, like, would I have any, if I'm an amateur, right, and all I got to do is pay my fucking 50, 60 bucks and I'm in the games.
Yeah.
Am I going to put any effort into training? Am I going to put any effort into being better? Maybe the first couple of years, I'm like, oh, let's see where I can be, right? After that, it's like adulting, working, fucking
things are going to get in your way.
Beach volleyball,
very,
you know,
at
like,
a, things are going to get in your way at a very low level.
Oh, sorry, I can't make it. I got a baking class I got to be at that weekend.
Exactly. You're going to be like,
you know, like, and no one gives a fuck.
The threshold for, like, I'm not going to put any effort into that, it's very low, right? Like, my knees, not like I'm injured, but like, my knees are a little sore. I shouldn't do that.
I'm not going to pay the $50.
Yeah, because I'm sore.
To be there this
year. Yeah, I don't know, whatever.
But the other part, outside of the athlete retention, right, which I think, again, is the number one. Like, that's the only reason you're keeping the athletes that you have that are quality athletes is because you're eventually going to pay them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But it also improves the quality of the sport because you're encouraging the crowd interaction aspect, right?
Yeah.
99% of the amateurs out there
don't interact.
Don't understand that aspect. And so you're going to lose eventually a portion of that crowd because no one's talking to them. No one's interacting with them.
Even something as simple as, like, the event's over. You just hang out by the fence
just
for
5 minutes. Answer some questions.
And like there could be nobody talking to you, but if you stand there for 5 minutes at the end of an event, someone's gonna come up and want to talk, want to take a picture, want to ask a question, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like the professional class as a whole
so much better at it.
Yeah.
Better at it, and
but again, you've
more willing to do it.
More
maybe,
willing, yeah.
You know?
You've weeded out those people throughout the amateur process, right? Like.
Mm-hmm.
And again, not necessarily just based on events, but, like, you see the enjoyment. Like, the people that enjoy putting on a show, like, enjoy the games more, too.
Yeah.
Like, they have more fun. They're more interactive. They're interacting with each other
and
better.
And fun is,
like,
contagious. It's
and, like, they're in the games, and it was way more prevalent in track and field. Like, people were so involved in themselves. I need to be good in these three throws because this is my livelihood, right?
Yeah.
Like, if I fuck this up, I'm not going to Worlds. I'm not going to USAs. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. And the games are like, fuck, if I fuck this up, shit, I got six more events. I got six more three rounds to also shit the bed. You know what I'm talking about? You know, you get
in one
so
of these 24
more,
throws that I got this weekend, I'm going to fucking do one of them.
I will at least do one throw
one
well
good
today.
Throw. I got you.
And it, for fucking 75% of us, that's all it takes.
Yeah.
You walk the way, like, for me this weekend, I took, seventh overall? Whatever it was. Not exciting event at Pleasanton, right?
Yeah.
Sixth.
Fucking eat my dick. but I came away with a season's best in lightweight.
Yeah.
You know, like, didn't throw well or exciting in anything else. But at the end of the day, I still ended up with a season's best.
Yeah, good.
In something.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because
that's
I didn't
cool
just be like,
it.
Oh my God, hammers were trash. I quit.
The
weekend.
Yeah, go in there.
There was one lady, we were over by the hammers, and older lady, and she's talking to me after the hammers, and she's like, you know, this is the first time I've ever seen a games. And I don't know if she was following us around because we had the title of professional, but like she followed us from event to event, and I talked to her after hammer, and then I talked to her after the lightweight. And walking over to the, or just before we walked over, and she's like, this is my first time going to games. I'm coming back every single year from now on.
And that's good.
And she literally, I don't know where she sat for, like, near the grandstands, but, like, she followed up the pro class from the stone over to the hammer to the weight. Like,
we had the same thing in Maine, though. We had we had a posse going with us everywhere.
Yeah,
so
well, it's, so this is the crazy part about the games, right? Is like the festival isn't going to make any money off the pros, right? They're going to essentially lose money on the pros. But the games that essentially only have pros have such a better fan engagement.
1,000.
Like, so Victoria, I think, is a great example of this, and they do this in pretty much everywhere in Scotland, too, is you have your locals or your amateurs or whatever you want to do. You have one or two classes in the morning. They run their six events, ten, even if you want to do a 10-event day, right? Like, you run that in the morning. You start at 8, they're done by, like, noon. Because there's only two people on the field, you run them through, yeah. Right? It's great. The morning crowd gets to see some things. They don't really understand what's going on, blah, blah, blah. By the time the afternoon starts, like, Victoria runs... The afternoon class starts at, I think, noon.
Yeah.
You run a men's pro and a women's pro. That's it. And they run simultaneously. There's never not a moment on that field where someone's not throwing.
Yeah.
As soon as our event's done, they're warming up before we're done.
Yeah.
And they're getting ready to throw. While they're throwing, we're warming up. Like, it's a fucking yeah. rotation. And the announcer is there, and they're a part of it. You get to know the athletes. You get to understand the events they've got, you know, even if they've got some markers in the field, whatever, like, that's the way to keep fans engaged.
Yeah.
Like, and honestly, it's too much to watch 9 classes at once.
You're right.
You're listening to Beth today, great announcer. She's fucking
one of the best
lights
in the
out,
yeah.
right? Like, doing everything. We still have to have Matt Hand
announce for us.
Announce the pro class.
Yeah.
Only because we need someone else to keep our corner engaged.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I think Victoria and, like, Celtics, it's
Celtic
own
does
animal.
A really good
it's
job
its
on
own
it
app,
as
but
well.
But I think Victoria does that really, really well because they do cater to amateurs and masters. And, like, you still get all the classes that you want at a games. And then
but,
in the afternoon, the focus is on
focus
the men and women's pros. And mm-hmm. the entire... Anybody that is anywhere close to the fence line of Victoria is engaged in what's going on in the
yeah.
field, and they are one of the best crowds on the planet.
And they know year after year.
Oh yeah.
Who, if they're not going to see the same people?
Well,
but
I didn't go to Victoria for 2 years in a row.
Victoria does a really good job of letting you know who's there,
mm-hmm.
and they do a really good job then of bringing those people
yeah.
back.
Yeah.
Well,
they do a really good job of that engagement, that re-engagement, that fucking awareness of who you are, what you're doing, and they get people to love you.
Well, that's
and or hate
like,
you. You when, know, like, and sometimes the hate's just as good.
Yeah,
you know, they people need a villain.
But I had
people
coming up to me in Victoria this year. Like, I didn't. I mean, you know, I took the whole year off last year, and I had people coming up to me like from the crowd. They're like, we're so glad that you're back. It's been awesome. Like, I'm so glad to see you
mm-hmm.
back here. It's like, I'd only been there twice.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like I had been there for 10 years.
Yeah.
Right? But, like, there were... And it wasn't one person. There were multiple people in the crowd that were like, we watched you back in 2019. We watched you in 2020. Like, it was so awesome. We're so glad that you're back. Like, they are invested
mm-hmm.
in that games.
Yeah.
It's the same with, same idea... At least with the pro class, right? Same idea with Celtic. People are so engaged on who's there. They understand this is the best group.
Oh, last... I missed
2 years. I had people messaging me on Instagram.
That's what I was about to say.
On Facebook.
Like,
are you coming back? Where are you?
No, literally.
I'm getting messages on Saturday morning. I don't see your name on the list.
Yeah,
where are you? Where are you here?
when I had to pull out in 22, I got 10 messages on Instagram.
Yeah, like,
oh, I thought you were coming to Celtic. Like, what happened? Like literally.
Yeah.
Like the group, like the fans of Celtic are so invested.
That's pretty rad. We could like do better to spread that across the country. I think if you had more games that were just the pro class, like you said.
Well,
like, and I don't want to take away opportunities, but there.
But
that's why I say I think Victoria does it so well.
There are probably games out there that could do that though.
Yeah, there's a way to do both,
yeah.
right? And it's
well, the morning and afternoon thing.
Yeah,
it's
you kind of follow the Scottish way
model,
of doing
yeah.
it, the Scottish
yeah.
model. It's like you're, and they call it the locals.
Yeah,
right? You've got your local class in the morning, and then you have your open class in the afternoon. Yeah.
And as an athlete, when I was an amateur, never getting to watch the pros like directly, I was like, man, it'd be nice if I got to watch them, but I'm throwing my stuff and they're on the other side of the field.
Yeah.
So, and that's it. 2016, it worked for us really well.
In sorry, what was that?
We're having the attention on you. Like, you're not being overshadowed by the pro class.
Yeah.
You can, as an athlete,
that happened too.
You know, kind of rise to the ranks. And
yeah, you get your opportunity as an AM or as, you know,
spotlight,
whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. If that's
to showcase yourself, right?
Yeah.
The downside is, in which I think the reason why a lot of U.S. venues either will not or have not adapted that philosophy is because there's so much money to be made in having A classes compete every day.
Okay.
You know, like,
yeah, but
if I've got
6 hours then.
If I've got six different classes competing at once,
uh-huh.
even if one of those is pros, right? I've got five different classes of 10 athletes apiece. They're all paying $60. That's $600 per class that's paying to be on that field that day, right? And every games is in a financial battle with the
everything else.
With the venue, the Celtic Society, whoever's actually in charge, because the games is never in charge of the festival.
Athletics, I should say.
Athletics, yeah. Sorry. Athletics
not
is
all
never.
True. Jenny McDaniel's in charge of all of Alaska games.
Well,
she is the boss.
You got
rare.
You got rare.
Pleasanton, one of the best Highland games in the entire world. Steve had to go to every board meeting to make sure he said, don't take my money away from me. You don't take away my budget to give it to those guys. He had to go out there and fight every board
meeting. You're lucky if, again, across the entire U.S., there's 10% that are athlete-focused.
Yeah.
Everything else is festival-focused. And honestly, probably as it should be. Like, no one's coming to the games for the games, right? Like,
except there's a very small handful, few of games that are. But again, just as like with
it's the circus animal effect, sure. Right? Like, and I've said this 100 times before, and I've had it said to me 100 times before. Is like the Highland Games, the Scottish festivals, are a circus, right? Everybody wants to go to the circus. They want to eat food. They want to go see the freaks. Yeah. They want to do all this. One thing that everybody wants to see, even if they know it or not, is the circus animals, right? People want to see the elephants. They want to see a fucking bear ride a unicycle. They want to see fucking seals clapping balls. They want to do all this shit, right? We are those circus animals.
Right.
We give the people the opportunity to see shit that they've never seen before. And we encourage those people to come back in a way that they're like, oh my God, I know that if I go to this event...
Mm-hmm.
I can see this cool shit.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if you're to go to a Scottish festival on its own, how many times are you really interested in seeing the same Scottish tent, your same clan tent? How many times are you really interested in eating a meat pie?
Yeah.
You know, buying a sword. How many swords can you buy?
Yeah, right.
You know, like...
No, you're right. Absolutely.
Don't get me wrong, there's a shit ton of people that go just for the dancing.
Fantastic.
Shit ton of people that go just for the piping. Like,
yeah.
Again, we are only one portion of the interest and of the revenue. But we are a portion that is always entertaining, always different. You're never... The dances are literally based on doing the exact same dance.
Yeah.
The pipers are literally based on doing the exact same song. We're the only group that is based on doing something better every year.
Yeah. And I think that a good case study for that is like the Portland Highland Games, which is very prestigious Highland Games athletics. And then they got rid of it and... they got rid of athletics, and it looked like any old street fair that you see in any city. It was some booths with some swag, some booths with some food, and then maybe a couple clan tents that talked about that you could sit and talk to the old timers about, hey, what is your culture? So, I mean, that's a great case study. Like, yeah. One of the most successful games in the country, without athletics, didn't have any reason for people to sit around, stick around, and keep coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, again, like, you can only do that so many times.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You can only invite so many people to see that. Like, people aren't going to a football game to go to the concession stands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
there to watch
that, like, you know, like,
yeah. People like watching, yeah, athletes, people, gladiators, they,
yeah,
like watching,
exactly, them. Like, and again, we might not be the reason they showed up initially, but we might be the reason they stay, and exactly. We also might be the reason they come back next year.
Gets them sitting down and, while they're eating their funnel cake, or
but again, it also speaks to the point of the pro athlete being a crowd engager,
yeah.
Right, because if you just have a bunch of ams, a bunch of
we've all seen it
out there that just they
throw their weight, put their head down, and go shoot, and then walk away, or say yes, and then they walk away, and then go out and field jag and bring weight back, whatever.
Like there's so much more involved in the games than just throwing.
Yeah, for sure.
And like, is that maybe shitty for some athletes that just want to go out there and throw? Yes. But fuck those people. You know, like,
no name will be named.
Politely.
No, there's definitely room.
Go fuck yourself.
There's definitely room for some. There's definitely room for some of the more stoic, but they got to be programmed in the right games too, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Like there's going to be, you're going to program some people in, you're going to have the really enigmatic Matt Hand, Colin Dunbar, and who else is until today was just like engaged with the crowd. Like,
yeah.
You can pepper them in. They're solid athletes. They need to be there. They provide legitimacy to the sport, and they're going to attract more people like them that are very athletic and very good at it.
Matt Hand, for me, is one of those guys that, like, he could show up to every games, never throw a single event, and just commentate us for the rest of my life.
And have provided everything.
And I would slot him in for that 10th place.
Write him a check for
every
you don't have to throw away.
Yeah, he can literally.
I would never question it a day in my fucking life.
Write him a check.
100%.
Matt Hand.
He's a hero.
Yeah, he basically is. He's the young sun hero of.
No, he sings his songs.
He's
not unsung.
No. He's tooting that fucking. Toot toot!
Love you, Matt.
He does a great fucking job with it. Like,
he's really good.
And
he's
not
the embodiment of a professional Highland Games thrower.
He's not there to suit himself.
Yeah.
He is
highlighting everybody.
Autistic king.
All hail King Matt.
It's one of those things where, like, distance wise, should Matt be at every games? Maybe not. Should Eddie be at every games? Maybe not. Like there's
great.
A lot of people in that
solid entertainer.
That second five, right? If you're gonna do a 10-person games, there's a top five. They're like, all right, these people should be at every games.
I'm the cinematographer in the bottom five.
And then you make
perspective from the bottom.
hashtag bottom five.
I get them bottom angles.
Like you can make a case for every one of those bottom five and why they should be there and what they're bringing to not only the sport but those games.
Right.
Right. Is it like I'm bringing that sixth, seventh, eighth person because they live in that hometown, because they're a great cinematographer, because they're going to announce, because they have great energy.
All,
you know, because
all they, beautiful this, reasons they to have them there.
And it's, and that's the great part about the games is like, there's a very real level of competition and a level of fuck it, I want to have fun. Fuck it, I need to be entertaining.
Yeah.
Fuck it, we need to do this, that, and the other, you know? You can get invited to games because you helped set up the hammer cage the year before.
There you go.
You know, like,
you're in.
Yeah.
And you're in for life sometimes.
Yeah. 100%.
Set it up.
If I ever get uninvited from Costa Mesa, I'm going to kick somebody in the shins. I'll tell you that much. I can
uninvite Colin Dunbar and invite Danny Autry. Ray Shokowicz, if you're listening, I need Victoria invites.
Victoria is
I know, so I've heard.
So funny enough, I ended up going on Alaska cruise earlier this year, like a little over a month ago. And one of our stops was Victoria.
Yeah.
And I'm obviously not, I'm like thinking about the games, but I'm not thinking about really anything else, right? Like, we go out, we go to a couple bars. It's a late night stop in Victoria. Uh-huh. So like the only thing really to do is like go out to dinner or go out to some bars, right? We end up at a bar and I'm like, oh, like, I feel like I've heard of that place before, right? Because I've been to the games in Victoria once.
Was it the Stinky Wicket?
It's this shitty dive bar. Amazing. It's got fucking bills fucking plastered on the walls. It's all the shit.
Beautiful.
It's connected to the hotel that is our host hotel for the games.
Hell yeah.
And I show up and I'm like, oh, like, all right, what dive bars? We like, me and my mom and my girlfriend or my fiance now, whatever. We,
whatever. No big deal.
It's so weird to like, it's been 5 years. I gotta now say fiance.
Yeah.
I love you, baby. but like, we're like, all right, what are we gonna do? To be fair, she wasn't the fiance at the time.
Yeah.
So,
girlfriend.
Well, yeah, sorry, you're talking about Big Bad John's, which is right next to the Sticky Wicket.
Was it maybe it was Big Bad John's?
Yeah, because you're talking about the ones with all the dollars on the
wall. Yeah. Big Bad John's is the sports bar on the other side.
No, Stinky Wicket is the sports bar. Big Bad John's is the dive bar. Yeah.
Maybe that's why I was confused. Yeah. I was like, long story short, whatever. Like, all right, let's go to a dive bar, right? We pop up to this place, and I'm like, that's my host hotel. I stayed here. I ate dinner there. Like, this is my, like, I was here. I was this one. And I text some of the judges and the ADs after. I was like, hey. Like,
I'm here.
I'm like, I know you're not going to come meet me, but I'm here right now. Just wanted to say hi.
You know?
Like,
nice. Yeah,
shout out to the Strathcona, Big Bad John's, and the Sticky Wicket.
Yeah.
In Victoria.
Got a couple of slots for sponsorship opportunities on the couple slots they could probably work in.
Shout out to that liquor store that's also connected to the hotel. Can you?
The Strathcona liquor store. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you maybe lower your prices for Americans? This shit was weird. I had to buy beer and booze there twice, and I've been too many, too many. With a six pack and a fucking 375, a Canadian club.
Good night.
And I was like, oofta. Oofta.
Well, we're closing in on the amount of time that we recorded the first podcast. So,
all right, we gotta go downstairs.
We gotta go downstairs. Oh my goodness. We're Joe Rogan in over here.
We're coming up on 3 hours of content.
That's a lot. This is great. Jocko Willings.
I can break this up into like 17 episodes.
You could. You could actually. 17 quality episodes.
Yeah.
You get content for the rest of the year.
I mean, there's a lot of. We touched on a lot of different topics.
We touched a lot of things.
We touched a lot of peepees.
Yep.
And on that note, we are out of
podcast here. Topics, okay? PTs, you perverts.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. I really appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed these two episodes from the Pleasanton Highland Games. I hope to get a couple more of these done over the next few weeks. I've got two games left, one in Loon Mountain, New Hampshire, which is a controversial one, apparently. So maybe we can get into that a little bit. And then I've got the U.S. Championship at the Celtic Classic in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So a couple big games coming up. And I hope to get a few guys on here to continue just talking about the games. Next episode's probably going to be just a games recap. You know, I obviously didn't talk much about how the Pleasanton games went down. And in between releasing these two episodes, we had the Long's Peak Scottish Festival in Estes Park, Colorado, which was a very good games. So, look forward to that next week. But until then, thank you again for listening. Again, I really appreciate it. And I hope to continue talking Highland Games with all of you. Thanks.